I'm gonna actually use two, because I've been having trouble with...
Yeah, just look at menus, but I think you'll have to take all of them.
Okay.
Before you start.
Do you recommend anything?
I don't know. It depends what you like. I'm a bit more a meat person.
I'm a meat person.
I normally take continental burger, but it's not too.
Is that a beans on? The one time I got a burger here, it had like black sauce on it. I'll probably get the chili steak. Okay. So I'm holding. And you're Mateo?
Yes.
Okay. So what do you do for us here?
I'm a chief operating officer.
Okay. Thank you.
What do you can I have a continental burger? They can't bring two pets, they're two separate buns, no.
Oh, you want the one that is already cut?
Oh, yeah, or they can cut it in half.
Yes, here. They can do the chicken.
Okay.
I'll have the chili steak, please.
The chili steak?
Yes.
Do you want only hope, bread or panini?
Panini's good.
Yeah, and you must also ask me if you need anything from the HR side, because my HR manager is currently doing roadshows in Eastern Cape, so...
So you're in charge of that too?
Basically the way the structure works is John, then it's, I report directly to John, and then everyone else reports to me.
I see. So why do you have that extra layer? Why doesn't everyone just report to John?
Because John is in the U.S., so... And the other issue, you know, when he moved to U.S., you know, the board decided to kind of say, okay, you know, you have a person that's every day in charge of...
Right.
So, you know, he comes every few months for 2 weeks, and then he goes back, so... Yeah. Oh, all right. They told you coming for lunch, but I don't know. Yeah, if you come to Ashley's, I'm here already. Yeah. Okay. Oh, by that time we'll be gone to the office then. Yeah, so let's see if we can move Eric then forward, and then you meet him at 3. Yeah, but maybe we must swap. Okay, I'll see what I can do with Shania. Alright. Moses is out in the field, so he's running a little bit late, so I'll try and swap you, Eric, and him around for you.
Thank you.
I think the board felt that, you know, there has to be a person in charge here.
Okay.
Honestly, I'm not quite sure, but that's why it ended up.
When did you get the job?
Shania, Moses is running late. Can you arrange to swap Eric and him, maybe? and Moses. Can you try and see with Eric if he can meet him at 2? Huh? Can you try and see if Eric can meet him at 2? And Moses at 3 then? Okay, good. Yeah, so. You have HR summit tomorrow, isn't it?
Hmm?
When is your HR, or you don't have it at all?
I know.
Okay. Yeah, so I've been now at the job here and maybe 4 or 5 nights.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were you doing before?
I was operations manager before.
When did you join SEPA?
5 years ago.
What did you do before that?
I was in big business. I'm an accountant.
Okay. So why'd you get into SEPA?
Kind of decided to take it easy. John, I know from before. So then he asked me, can you use the skill management? Hello? Okay, good. Excellent. Alright, you'll have Eric as to that.
Okay, great.
Then I joined. I've been through many departments. I was in finance at some stage, audit, then operations, and then I am where I am now.
So you manage everyone else, basically?
Yeah, except there's a side that Anton manages, which is R&D, right department.
Who manages that?
Anton Simanovic. But he's an overseas small consultant. He worked kind of 70 days a year for us.
Okay.
And then he manages Pride. So I think you'll meet Rafil tomorrow or something. From Pride. So John, basically, I report to John. And then kind of Anton also reports to him, although he's a bit more of a consultant, however you want to term that. And then Anton directly manages the field only. In other words, what I manage now IT, finance, HR and training is together. Operations. Anything else that would be except R&D, I guess.
Do you go out in the field much?
These days, not much. I used to a lot more. When I was in operations, I mean, that was a job.
Yeah.
These days, it's not easy to get out, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
What languages do you speak?
I can understand quite a bit of Sotho now. I speak English. I'm Croatian originally, so that's my home language. In Afrikaans, kind of okay.
Alright, well, how are things going?
Sometimes tough, sometimes.
Sometimes tough? What's tough?
I think this whole year, we had a whole big transition and kind of John moved to States, I took new course, there was a lot of movements among managers,
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a little bit tough year, I would say. I'm feeling a lot better now, but I think the last year was challenging. And I think also, it was very difficult. People talk about recession and all these things. So you don't know whether it's because we're changing things or whether it's very difficult to pinpoint and say, okay, look, this is the problem or that's the problem. Last year definitely we had some growth challenges.
Some growth challenges.
Dropouts as well were quite...
Right.
High. At some stage during the year also the portfolio risk went high for our standards. For everyone else it's probably excellent, but You know, I mean, we normally have, I mean, 1.4, I think. So.
Wow, that's not very high.
Yeah. But, you know, like when we're running on 0.5, 6, 7, right. That's normal. Then, you know, it goes double.
Right.
It is high, you know. So, I mean, it kind of all came together in one time period. It was probably the worst time of worldwide recession as well. So, you know, it's just... Yeah. Although, I mean, from our side, I almost never blame recession. I usually always feel that it's internal issues, but, yeah.
So what did you blame? What did you think was going wrong?
Look, I think, you know, everybody moving and adapting to a new post, I think it was a bit of an issue.
Really?
A bit of a challenge. You know, I think all the managers, at least people that were reporting to me, they were all less than a year at the job. Everyone.
Okay.
So, it was, except operational managers, but, you know, they've been at a lower levels of operations, now you're putting them in a bit more strategic role. So, you know, John moved to US, which is also a bit further, it was also a bit new role for him as well. So, I don't know, it's difficult, you know. We also, what we've done, you know, we had a 40% growth in new branches. So I also feel that was maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah.
So I also feel partly that's also to blame. Maybe quite a bit, actually, but, you know, because, you know, all of a sudden you have a lot of new promotions, new people, new branches. You know, it plays impact, you know, always out of the field, out of the experience, DS, loan officers, you're pulling out a lot of people at once, you know, due to promotions and various things. So I think that whole thing impacted, you know, all of a sudden the bottom level, you're short of experience and all these things, you know. And skills in this country, I mean, are not easy to come by either, you know.
So how does all that translate into, I mean, what's the connection between, you know, having a lot of new people and having a high portfolio at risk or a high dropout rate?
Well, you know, I mean, new people, I mean, pretty much they're not experienced. So, you know, for example, when you talk about a loan officer or a DF, you know, I mean, an experienced loan officer, he knows how much they can increase loan size and all these. I mean, there's an issue that policy says this, but, you know, they still have their own, you know, someone who's got experience is because policy says you can give maximum, you don't necessarily have to give maximum if they feel, look, this person, it's better for them to take a little bit less. And that comes with experience, it's not something...
Right, knowing how much to loan
someone. Yeah, and, you know, so as soon, you know, when you're very inexperienced people, you'll find... very easily, you know, they'll just give maximums, those type of things. You know, then you have inexperienced branch managers, and so it's a whole, everybody, you know, it impacts you. I mean, it's like any other job, you know, where you've got experienced people and very new people. I mean, they make some mistakes, I guess. I guess that's the bottom line, you know.
What about dropout rates? How
does that... I mean, look, dropout is my belief, is almost directly linked to portfolio at risk. So as soon as you have a higher portfolio at risk, you drop out.
People bite off more than they can chew, and then they drop out.
Yeah, you see, but it's not necessarily people that were in areas that are dropping out. The problem is, you know, good clients now are, you know, finding themselves long time in center meetings because people are not paying on time, so even a good client, so you have this right. Knock-on effect, you know, on good clients, and so it's not just, okay, the clients that took inappropriate loan drops, you have this other effect on good clients where they also start leaving, you know, because now, you know, they're spending too much time in center meetings. Sometimes you might even find loan officers are pushing them very to pay for it, you know, so all those things, I mean, it's not our policy, but, you know, loan officers don't always really know, you know.
Right.
They all have different methods. And,
well, because they want to get a low portfolio at risk.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure there's quite a bit of that also.
Right.
Especially a good client, you know, because they know they've got money, so they also have a blind shoot. And generally, I actually found even people don't mind paying for artists. Your biggest problem is actually you need to make sure that those people get their money back. And the inexperienced loan officers, once they got a payment for self, you'll find that, you know,
they're out of the picture.
They don't really care how the original client gets money back, you know, from the one that he lent the money to. And then that one eventually starts leaving because I'm paying, I'm never getting my money, you know, so it's but generally people, you know, are very social, they don't mind paying for it, that's not an issue. But as long as you make sure they get paid back, you know.
Right.
And this is where, you know, an experienced person does count. Because really, I mean, look, they're supposed to do it, but it's not, it's beyond their call. Look, they got the money back from organization, it's really, they got to go extra mile and make sure, you know, that everybody gets their money back. You know, we wouldn't know here that somebody can pay or something. It's usually, you know, addressed by the center. And it's not something that will be recorded or something, you know, essentially.
So you're saying that when people are having trouble repaying, usually the loan officers get the good clients to cover for them, and then the risk is that if the good clients don't get paid
well,
back,
I would, I wouldn't say necessarily usually. I think good loan officers don't necessarily, you know,
right.
I mean, good loan officers have their own methods. And,
what are their own methods?
Well, like, for example, you know, they might have a center meeting day before. Not a center meeting, but just a quick meeting with everybody, all the group, chairpersons and a center, and say, okay, has everybody got money, you know, to pay? And then they'll arrive there, they'll discover already, now it's day before already, you know, that, okay, this person is short or something. And then, you know, they got a full day basically to make a plan or whatever. So when you come to a center, actually everything runs very smoothly. The other issue, you know, especially, you know, I mean, where it comes back, you know, they would give appropriate loan sizes, they would make sure that people are running business, they all those right things you've got to do, you know. You know, when you, and, you know, I think once you get more and more people, you know, becoming a lot harder to enforce that everybody does the same thing exactly, you know, so.
How do you enforce that?
I mean, that's one of the current challenges, I must say, you know, we are looking at, you know, because in a lot of ways, you know, we know how to give a loan. As long as you give a loan and follow a step exactly how it's written down, usually loan comes back 100% without any issues. You'll always find whenever somebody's gone into arrears or something, if you really go dig in it, you'll see that somebody skipped some step somewhere. So, you know, I mean, the way I see this business these days, it's more like McDonald's, you know, this is how you make a Big Mac. The person in McDonald's, he doesn't get to choose how many patties that he want to put or pieces of lettuce or whatever, you know, it's a... That's what you get finished, you know. So yes, I think this is the year definitely working on those type of things, you know. We're getting some help from some people that, you know, have some experience with setting up systems, and more like a franchising time. We're not necessarily, I'm not saying we're going franchising, but franchise type systems, you know, where you, everything is done. So yeah, I think we're missing that. Actually, you know, policies, procedures, everything is there, but the enforcement and what happens when they're broken, that's the part we haven't figured out, you know. Traditionally, you know, when policy is broken, yes, you have a you know, a disciplinary action that, you know, that's a progressive. But it doesn't really work well, because very soon you've got all your people on fine alert and warning, and now what, you can't go fire, right? So it's more... One needs to build maybe alternative systems, you know. You know, this is purely what we got is what the country's labor law dictates you to do, but it doesn't really work that well.
What do you mean it doesn't work that well?
Well, like I say, if you let everybody in final ceremony, you're going to fire half of people. No, you know, you're going to kill the company. So you need to look at other alternatives, you know. Whether that's maybe playing with people's commissions, they do something, you know, maybe something a little bit different, not just the traditional stick. Maybe a carrot needs to, you know, something to incentivize them, you know, those type of things they might need to be created rather than a more stick approach. You know. Although I think, you know, we do plenty of carrot actually, but it just, you know, I think it needs to be a bit more specific, you know. So that's a part I think we're missing, you know, like for example, when one almost needs to say, okay, if you broke this, this is the consequence.
Got it.
And this is exactly how it's going
to
be.
And
so
you feel you've got work to do on being clear on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right now, it's, I mean, you know, even a different blind trader might not be even consistent enough, you know, to say, okay, you know, one might read something that way, the other one reads. So I think, you know, one needs to be, you know, the business works well when it's actually simple and there isn't much thinking to be done, when you just have everything. Okay, if you do A, B happens. And you know, when there isn't much of, you know, kind of saying, okay, you know, let them work out their own way, because then you lose it, you know. So what you need, you know, we do need to definitely, I think, compact and kind of make it a proper system. I mean, you know, it might require even maybe some new positions that we don't have currently, maybe a little bit new approach to certain things. I mean, as I say, we haven't worked it out, so I mean, I've got some ideas, but I think it still needs to be tested, all those type of things.
So what are the key ingredients for you? I mean, what do you think are the important parts of the franchise that if they go well, things will be fine?
Look, I mean, it's like this, you know, that I mean, there are certain steps to give a loan.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that all those steps for every loan.
So what are the steps?
Followed. Like, I mean, I guess, I don't know how much you got from John or whatever, but first we start with that PWR process in the village. I don't know if you're familiar with that, so I'm not going to go into that when we go about.
That's choosing the poorer people poorest, in the village.
You know, that whole targeting, you know, tool. Then you move into saying, okay, group formation. Now, I can tell you, I mean, that's probably for me the most important thing. If you get your group right, most of your problems afterwards are minimal.
Okay.
Then the issues of appropriate loan sizes, making sure that people use the money for what they said they would use the money. You know, that's the other very important thing. Because, I mean, you know, the person will tell you, I'll start a business, but you show up there 2 weeks later, there's a big pile of bricks he wants to build up. Now what you're going to do? I mean, he doesn't have the money there for you. So, you know, it's those type of things that are really important. You know. Discipline, you know, that's a big thing.
What's key about choosing the groups?
You know,
a good group?
You know, the people know each other well. You know, if you ask my loan officer's experience, when they even tell you, hopefully they know each other from somewhere their money was involved previously. So not just knowing, but if they know each other from, let's say, they're in burial societies, or however they're contributing money, it's even better. So yeah, I mean, you know, that you really, really know each other. I mean, that's the key to the group. And the group is committed, that the group is committed. You know, disciplined. In other words, you know, they all come on time. And why is that important? You know, for me, it's like choosing a partner in a business. I mean, you want to choose a right partner, not, and that's why you've got to know each other so well. You know. It's not different, not much different. You know, fine, everybody has their own individual businesses, but still, you know, you are jointly liable. Yeah.
So you think if people don't know each other well, they'll be more likely to bite off more than they can chew because...
Yeah, I mean, you know, even when it comes to issues, you know, what makes a good group is actually more how do they react when there's crisis time. So, like, let's say when somebody's business goes down. Mm-hmm. The good group should get together, help, you know, everybody pitches with a couple under it and help them revive their business. And this is where it becomes very important that people know each other well, because they'll do that if they're friends, if they know each other well. If you don't really know that other person, you won't care.
Right.
And that's the key ingredient to the care part for each other at the end of the day, you know. So that's what happens if you just get random fun individuals, you know. I mean, if everything's going well, everybody's business are doing okay, then it's really not a problem anyway. But as soon as you hit crisis, then you see the group disintegrating, you know.
So you guys have very few missed payments, but you might have a lot of... There might be a lot of, like, times that a person can't pay their own loan, but Seth still gets the payment.
Yes.
I mean, how often do you think that happens?
I mean, I wouldn't even be able to give you an estimate.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
I mean, I don't have... Maybe it's a lot, maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
It seems like you think it might be a lot, because you think...
I don't think it's...
Think of it as a key issue.
I mean,
it
depends what you want to say a lot, you know, but... I think, you know, like during January times, you know, I mean, you got your peaks. It's probably quite a bit, you know. But as I say, you know, what is quite a bit? Is it 5%? Is it 20? Is it 30? Is it 3? I don't know. You know?
You think it's enough that, you know, the portfolio risk would be higher if the people didn't know each other, weren't covering for each other? Thank you.
That's fine, thanks.
Can I get you another?
Yes.
Me too, please.
Look, I think it's definitely...
This is a knife.
You're missing a knife.
No, I got that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where it came
from. You know, I think even that's definitely seasonal, you know. I think during certain months, like September, October, it's probably minimal, you know, but...
Why?
But I guess, you know, it's proportional to your portfolio at risk, you know. I mean, if it's higher, obviously there's a lot more. That happening is lower, there's less. So, I don't think two things are... I think two things are very directly related, you know. Now, what is the multiplier effect? I don't know, but, you know.
Why is January a bad month and September a bad month?
You know what, first, Christmas in this country is a massive thing. So, people, you know, they have visitors from all over the country that come back, you know, and work away and stuff. And I can tell you, I think by January, generally, they spend all their money. You know, on Christmas celebrations and these type of things.
Interesting.
So January, and then in January, then you start getting school fees, those type of things, because now children are starting. So it's almost a double blow, you know.
Yeah.
So January is always tough. Doesn't matter actually which business in this country you go to, from our business to banks to anywhere. It's a, you know, that's what it is. You know, it's not really that we expect it particularly versus some.
Right.
It's across countrywide.
Yeah.
So
if you see warning signs, if you see portfolio risk starting to tick up, or dropout rates starting to tick up, what do you do to figure out what's going on?
Look, I mean, generally you try and force your standards more.
You try and what?
You really try and focus on your standards, operating standards and stuff. Because ultimately that's how you're gonna fix it, not by some magic.
Right.
You know, you really, I mean, what you typically do, you know, you get all the DFs together, you know, you would do your loan size type of workshops where, you know, you talk to them about appropriate loan sizes, making sure that people are running businesses. I mean, those would be your traditional mm-hmm. responses. It's not, and usually they work. Actually, it delivers results, you know. So it's just a bit more, you know, getting DFs in again, and, you know, refreshing
So you're saying the last, sorry, when did you say the last time was that you started having warning signs? Like a year ago or so?
Yeah, I think particularly beginning of last year was tough, you know, now, but what I mean, right, from January to April. You know. Actually, how I would generally judge it, like in January we used to, at least, it's normal. But actually, you know whether you're having a good year depending how quickly you clear those January areas.
Okay.
So if by February you're okay generally, then you're doing very well.
Right.
Last year they went all the way into April and
still had arrears.
It's nearly into May, and, you know, so it's that type of, I mean, it's just a rough call, but it generally works, yeah. Because what actually happens, you know, you will find it in operations, you know, they're almost able to concentrate only on one thing at a time. What I always found with operations, if you give them too many things to fix in one go, then nothing gets fixed.
What does operations do? You used to be in operations, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's your business, what you saw out there.
No.
So all the loan officers are in operations.
I see.
Branch managers. Everything has got to do with the field.
What did you do when you were in operations?
I was operation manager.
Hmm?
I was ops manager.
So what does that mean?
I was in charge of all the operations topics.
So you, the branch managers reported to you?
No, there is. I mean, there's other two layers in between, but...
Oh, wow. So what are the layers? The DS report to the branch managers.
Okay, DS report to branch managers. Branch managers report to zonal managers. Currently, zonal managers report to regional managers. Mm. And the regional managers report to me. Mm. So, that time, there was no regional manager, but then I was a kind of general manager of operations. So different zonal managers reported to me.
And you went in, you would go into the field to check on how things were going?
Yeah, I mean, that's the job, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a big believer the ops manager shouldn't be in the office ever. Mm. Only when we got visitors and they need to talk to them or something, otherwise they need to be out there, you know.
So basically, you spent all your time going to the field and seeing, are things operating the way they're
supposed to? Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, you analyze, you look at, okay, this is a weaker branch, so let me spend some time there, you know, distressing, well, maybe you don't necessarily go there.
It must be tough when you don't speak the language. You say you now speak it a little bit.
You know, I mean, I can understand quite a bit, but, you know, I would stay far from speak. It's tough, but it's, I don't know, it's not, you know, like...
Did DS translate for you?
And look at you. Tell you what they want to tell you, but you'll think. I don't know how to tell you. You pick, you know, with time you see the thing. Although it doesn't matter if you don't speak a language, you'll see. You know what? There's nonsense here. It's not. You know, then you might go get the zonal manager or something and say, okay, can you go ahead?
Right.
See what exactly is.
Right. I see.
I mean, you'll pick.
Got it.
Anyway, you spend any 6 months in the field, you know, you learn very quickly when there is a problem and when there is no problem, you know.
Yeah. So it seems like Seth is very, I guess one thing that occurs to me is it seems very selective. In terms of, like, in the village we went to, there was probably only 30 people in the village who were in Seth, you know, out of a very large number of people.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're very careful about not letting people take out bigger loans than they can handle, and, you know, so you end up being very...
You know, I wish we were very careful, yes. You know, I think we've been trying to be, but it's not always, like I told you, it's not always...
Right.
I mean, we try.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's still perfect.
But you have a very...
But, you know, we set ourselves very high standards. We also need to...
Right.
Yeah.
You have a very high repayment rate by just about any standard.
Yeah.
So, kind of, you know, is it accurate to say that you're very, I don't know, that you'd rather serve fewer people and make fewer loans and make sure they can pay them all back versus serving more people and making more loans and having a little more of a mess?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we are quality-focused organization, not necessarily number-focused. Don't get me wrong, numbers are important too, but...
Right.
But I would rather have a quality portfolio than a... I would rather have 60,000 excellent clients than 200,000 kind of with an repayment rate of 95%.
So really, when you're having a problem, a lot of what you try to do to fix the problem is kind of tighten things down again.
Yeah.
Say, we'd rather serve fewer people.
Yeah.
Make sure we get these high repayment rates and low dropout rates.
Mm.
Do you think 20% is a low dropout rate?
No, I don't.
I mean, isn't that around what you guys have?
Mm. But I mean, I think it's high, kind of.
I mean, I don't really know what to think of it. I don't know if it's high or low. But I just, one of our worries with microfinance is that people take the loans, they pay them back, but it's not really in their interest. They, you know, they end up paying a lot of money in interest, and in the end, they probably would have been better not taking out the loans. Is that something you worry about?
I mean, that's something we focus quite a bit on, you know, impact on the clients and stuff. And then I feel that will be able to enlighten you quite a bit more. But I mean, all these things, that's why, you know, I spoke about appropriate loan sizes, those type of things,
mm-hmm.
making sure the client is not over-indebted, you know, that's what it comes down to.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've got a little bit different theory to it, you know, and people, when client comes to us, this client has nothing. I can tell you, you know, microfinance is not a silver bullet, you know, that now fixes everything.
Right.
But the way I look at it, I think it puts food on people's tables and, you know, it makes them survive, provide for basic needs.
Mm-hmm.
Not more than that, you know. I know after, you know, Yunus won a Nobel Peace Prize, a lot of people coming and they think it's some sort of a magic thing and, you know, people all of a sudden become wealthy. It's not that. It's more they can cater for basic needs, majority of my clients. Mm-hmm. By the way I look at it, client came to us, they had nothing. They took $1,000 loan. If after 6 months they pay back our loan, they provided for their family, and maybe they have a $200-$300 business, that for me is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an issue
right.
with that. You understand what I'm trying to say? So it's not like I'm expecting $1,000 in business after 6 months or something. I don't think that's necessary. Remember, they moved up by $300 in asset value, and they ate and
right.
whatever else, you know,
yeah.
the needs were. And to me that's important, you know. So like, for example, one of our big conditions for loans is that a business has to grow to get an increased loan.
Uh-huh.
Business has to grow between loan cycles.
But it can stay the same and keep getting the same loan.
Yeah, but anyway, that's okay, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it seems like most of these businesses, it's like they only have so much room to grow.
So yeah.
You know, the woman I talked to, one of the women I talked to, she sells clothing, she works all day on the clothing. She didn't really talk about wanting to hire someone or scale up. It
yeah.
just seems like she needs to have enough to buy all the clothing she can make in the time she has, and then she's not going to go any further than that. Is that kind of the usual story?
I think that, you know, I might say I compare it to traditional businesses too. And if I can give you my version of it, like if you take this town, I mean, know, people are a lot more educated and stuff like that. I'm not even getting. But if you start 100 businesses in this town, I think something like 70% of them will fail within year one. The other 30%, I mean 29% maybe of those 30% will be businesses that will carry on making, get to that stage.
Right.
You know, where they monthly, they make a little bit of money for the owner, but it doesn't really grow. And then 1% of those clients will excel, or 1% of those businesses will excel and will create one day millionaires and
right.
whatnot. My client structure is not that different at the end of the day, you know. You know, like maybe I can tell you we got about 1,000 extremely successful clients, you know.
How successful? What they do?
You know, they might even be worth a million rand.
Wow.
And they started with nothing, you know.
Right. What kind of businesses are those?
What I always found, the clients that do extremely well are those that find a niche market. Something not usual, like
right.
if you send fruit and veg, you'll never get it, you know, because everyone
right.
is selling fruit and veg.
Makes sense.
But for example, I know a lady in not far from here, you know, she sews clothing for traditional weddings. So like for example, one wedding for her is 20,000 rand, you know, because, you know, they sew clothing for everybody, you know, it's a big occasion. And after that, from there, she bought Bucky, she bought taxis, she bought all cash paid, you know. So, I mean, she, these days, you know, she might have a million rand worth of cars, like, you know, whatever the issue is.
Worth of what?
Cars, so just...
Cars? Or
yeah,
cars?
Taxis, cars.
Oh, okay.
You know, like taxis, Bucky. Bucky is, I mean, it's big. What's the American? The van, you know, the thing that got a...
Shuttle?
Huh? It's very popular in Africa because they use it for business. You know, I mean, you know, you've got two seats at the front and a loading bin at the back. What is that?
Truck?
Like a pickup truck. Truck is the bigger, but
yeah.
a pickup truck, yeah.
Yeah.
But so that's Bucky, you know, but... So yeah, it's... So you have clients like that, don't get me wrong. You do, but you know, maybe out of 60,000, you'll get 1,000 of those, maybe less, maybe 500-600 of those. I think the last time I was checking, it was maybe about 600 of those types of clients. So you know, it comes back to your 1% or something, and I think that's what it would be in any other normal business spread, you know. So
what about I mean, one other thing that would worry me if I were in your shoes is that the DFs
yeah.
are judged on their repayment rates and their retention rates. And so I wonder if they're putting undue pressure on clients. You know what I'm saying? Like if,
yeah.
if a client's having trouble, putting a lot of pressure on them to repay. Huh? Yeah, I'm finished. Thank you. Putting a lot of pressure on them to repay, putting a lot of pressure on them to stay in the group, even if they don't want to stay in the group. And you know, basically what gets measured gets done. Do you worry about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's I mean, look, what you do, you try and preach quite a bit on about, you know, building long-term quality of portfolio.
Right.
And that's not a long-term quality of portfolio. Because if you're forcing people that don't want to be there next time, they just don't pay.
Right.
And then, you know, when you go and tell them, oh, say, look, I didn't want to be here in the first place. What? So, I would hope most of my dears understand the long term, and we spend quite a bit of time training on that, you know.
Yep.
So yeah, some will you always get that will take a shortcut or a short term view on things, but I would hope majority.
What do you think you'd be doing if you weren't for Seth?
I don't know. Maybe my own business.
Non-profit or a business?
I would like a social type of business, but I mean, I don't necessarily exclude profit. And
right.
You don't have to necessarily be non-profit and run.
I don't either. I'm just wondering
yeah.
what you would see yourself doing.
you have anything else?
Let me check. I had a few notes. I think I've covered all the questions.
If you go to HR questions, you can ask me now as well, from human resource side.
Well, what questions should I have? Got any suggestions?
Look, I can tell you, in this country, I think your biggest problem in microfinance is human resources.
Okay.
By far. Okay. Money is not really an issue. You know, because of the former apartheid education system and stuff, the pool of skills that we are picking from is very thin. So, for example, your loan officer, you've got to teach them from basics. They might not even be able to work out 10% for you.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Right, and then you need branch managers. And
yeah, and I mean, out of those people, you're getting branch managers, so, you know, you're constantly, I mean, you spend a lot more money in here on training people and stuff than you would somewhere else. But you know, you're constantly teaching basic management skill, basic, you know, nothing really advanced, you know.
Right.
It's a challenge. Then what happens is, you know, the government has the affirmative action policy currently in the country. So right. What happens even when we, you know, so you have a very small pool of, like, skill, and everybody wants them.
Right.
So even when you get a good guy, your chance of actually holding on to him is...
And do you guys prefer to hire blacks? And why is that?
Well, first, it's our working environment anyway.
What?
It's our working environment, okay. You know, so you can't run away from it. And secondly, look, I mean, we're not really under affirmative action pressure, but, I mean, you want to do it anyway. I mean, that's our business. It's for development of people anyway, so including your staff, you know, just...
Right.
Yeah. But it's a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways, sometimes it does matter, you know, when you go apply for some government funding or something, you know. I mean, they do look at that very strictly. So you do have to... So look, I mean, basically, it's the law of the country, you know. It's not...
Yeah.
You don't have a choice. It's not optional. It's...
Right.
It's a must.
So John told me a little bit about how you recruit DFs.
Yeah.
What are the other roles that you guys need to fill, and how do you recruit for them?
I can tell you to recruit the senior manager is always a challenge.
Okay.
Always.
What's a senior manager?
Like a finance manager, let's say. Like now we got a post for financial manager. It's a challenge to get a good one. I'm being very honest. You know. I mean, you know, we were looking for HR manager for a long time, for a year, year and a half, we couldn't get one. I mean, there are some issues, I think, maybe even with location where we are, you know, maybe if we were in big cities, head office and stuff, maybe we'd have a big better chance, but on the other hand, in big cities, your labor force is so much more mobile, you know, today you're hired and tomorrow, you know, one thing that I think it's not like in US, you know, so if you look at South Africa, you know, in US, I think people look at CVs and say, look, this guy has really stays long time with some company and stuff. Here, the more movement you have, the better you are. So people move, I mean, you know, within a year, you can move two jobs, you know, especially if you're black and you're skilled, you know.
Right.
You know, within 2 months, you can move, you know. So it's a challenge keeping people and hiring them. At the same time, because what happens, you know, if they're good, then their demand very, like NGO, we can't pay them money, so obviously when you go with commercial sectors, you can't compete.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah. So, you know, you always end up compromising ultimately. It's not exactly what you want, but you'll say, okay, I can lower these shortfalls and then, so, you know. Or, like, we do quite a bit of, you know, promotions from within where we can, but then, you know, I mean, you're not getting a professional like that thing. You kind of always try to teach, send on courses, and maybe just by the time you taught them well, you know, someone else comes and grabs them anyway, so.
Yeah. So what do you do to get your senior management? You just kind of advertise, see who comes in, do the best you can?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay. Are you, on another topic, are you able to walk me through your data collection process? Where the numbers come from?
Yeah. What basically happens, I mean, you end in a field today.
Mm-hmm.
Lona DS report to branch managers.
Yep.
Now, DFs are in the field Monday to Thursday. On Friday is a branch day, paperwork day, whatever you want. And this is when they go into the branch office. So all the application, all the repayment schedules, everything comes into the branch office on Friday. Then on Monday, every Monday, a branch managers have a meeting, zonal meeting. In other words, with their zonal managers. And then they bring all those applications, all that paperwork there. And then what we happen, we have a driver with a pickup truck, or, yeah, thanks. We have a driver with a pickup truck, or they send it via post or whatever to us here at the head office. Actually, to be more correct, we got an administrative office, which is a little bit further from the head office.
Okay.
So they, and then that's where it gets captured. It's all centralized.
Capturing so, and what data is that? That's who repaid, how much they repaid, if they didn't repay, why they didn't repay.
No, not really why.
Okay. I know, I mean, we've seen like a separate stat for death defaults.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So that's taken
I mean,
that,
but not if somebody's in arrears, you're not going to get a big story saying, okay, this group is in arrears because of...
Right.
But if it is like a death though.
Right. And you get reports of everyone who joins, everyone who drops out.
Gets captured here.
And what other data do you collect in front of the member? Those are the main ones I know.
I mean, basically, you know, business values.
Business values, really?
Yeah.
You track all those over time?
Business value is captured with application. So every time they apply for a new loan, you will recapture. I mean, maybe you didn't see applications today.
Yeah.
But what you saw is a repayment process mostly,
right,
and paperwork around repayment, but there's a whole lot of paperwork around application. So typically your business value broken down into stock, cash, savings, and debtors.
Do you collect the business type?
Yeah.
Okay, that's also in there.
Business type, business value, employment sometimes. Although at that point it's a bit more rough, yes.
Right.
I wouldn't necessarily trust it 100%, but probably 80% close to higher. You know, they'll basically ask, who do you have working with? Maybe a child, or do you work by yourself? So they capture a number just. Those would be the basic.
How come people have to go to these meetings? Why can't they just, you know, they have to meet the DF at a certain time and pay? Why do they have to join up with all these other groups and sit around?
I think the meeting is important. It does, I think it helps the group cohesion and center cohesion. You know, one of your big risk determinants is a center. You know, so for example, you know, center decides who they want in, who they don't want in, ultimately. So, you know, yes, it's important. It's your, I mean, the way I look at it, it's more like my credit committee center, not anybody else. You know. And what you will find is attendance is very closely related to, you know, that's your first signs of problems. And it comes back, I think, from the, you know, I mean, one major thing for the group is discipline. And it's part of discipline, you know, that you come every fortnight. And, you know, you see your fellow group members, so at least you're making sure, you know, that the group is still functioning. But if you just didn't have that at all, you know. I can tell you, at least in this country, programs that do run with centers do a lot better than the ones that don't.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's that whole discipline aspect and things. It's a lot more enforced with that.
Maybe the kind of, it's a you know, you get shamed if you can't.
Yeah.
If you don't show up, you don't pay, and there's all these people there.
Mm. Maybe, but.
If we could switch gears one more time, can you just tell me what all the different departments are and the whole structure of that? You know, I understand the operations side, the DFs, branch managers, zone managers, mm-hmm. regional operations yeah. manager, and then you. Who else is working it, Seth?
I mean, let's start small one, IT department. We just have IT manager and one kind of desktop support technician.
Right.
Then you have a big administration department. And that reports into finance. But basically all the loan processing happens there. Repayments, disbursement. There was quite maybe 20, 25 people. Then obviously you have finance, which is your accountant, keeper, stuff like that. Then you have Pride R&D. They do a lot of research. They do a lot of work on social side of business as well, you know. It's mostly sitting there, you know. And then, okay, IT, eventual finance pretty much, operations, HR. So obviously your human resources and self-explanatory, and but they do have training under them, which is a big, also a big headache.
And who's in HR? How big is that department?
You have a HR manager. But he almost has two. He has two. Almost two branches, you know, kind of thing. One is the training part, and one is the HR more contract, you know, industrial relations. And then a training part, I mean, currently there's a vacant post for a training manager. And he would have about 5-6 trainers under him. People that physically do the training. And on this side you have your HR, kind of like assistant HR manager. But that's a bit more HR, you know, leave, salary,
right.
contracts, whatever. Yeah.
So HR, IT, R&D, operations,
finance.
Oh,
internal audit.
Internal audit.
Yeah.
What's that?
I mean, it's a bit more, but actually, it's a quality assurance thing.
Okay.
We don't really have a traditional internal auditing skill in house. So, you know, they've been more, they're very field-orientated. Mostly they go around checking branches, if they're complying with regulations. But it's a bit more quality assurance than actual internal audit. It's just traditional. You know, like they're not really able to audit finance.
So what do they audit?
You know, branches, basically operations. It's very operational.
So it's almost like another operations department that just checks on things.
I guess you could tell me that. Actually, it's separate completely.
I just don't understand how their role is different. You know, you say as operations manager that you would go to meetings and see how things were going.
Look, at the end of the day, it's not different. It's a more independent report of
Got it.
I mean, if I'm an operation manager, I'm telling everything is going well.
I got it.
It doesn't really help you, but it's being, you know, independent department comes and does it. That's not in really in your line of reporting. It's,
hello.
It's obvious, really, but, you know.
Yeah.
Because they got no interest whatsoever.
Yeah.
Commissions, anything, nothing depends on it.
They're salaried, there's no incentive for them. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, so it's more...
It's interesting stuff. Do you think that most microfinance institutions, you know, do you think I'd be able to have a similar conversation, or do you think they work very differently?
I don't know, I mean, you might find it a lot more open than others. Maybe other than... I mean, you know, we, at least, you know, John and I, you know, and we try to reach to everyone, you know, I'll tell you the way it is.
Sure.
I don't sugarcoat.
But do you think, forgetting about being open, do you think that other microfinance institutions run similarly?
They do, I think, Grameen type microfinance institution would, maybe slight.
They're all looking at dropout rates and par and...
Dropout rate, not everybody looks at, actually. I mean, in fact, that one, I don't think it's that common, I must say. And I think people don't want to see them as so.
Yeah, they're high.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we are doing it because it's our social measurement and from that perspective, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, you're definitely a microfinance institution, but I mean, they just give loans, finish, and
right,
heavily focused on repayments, end of story, you know.
Repayment, and even just bottom line, right?
Yeah, you can get even just bottom line.
Even if repayment falls, then maybe interest rises. All right, we're all set.
Yeah, yeah, so,
Can we get the bill, please?
Yeah, so it's... I don't think necessarily dropouts, but other things are standard. You know.
So my basic picture, just if I were to summarize what you guys do in a nutshell, is that you're basically recruiting these DFs and trying to get them to be able to, you know, make good judgments about who belongs in a group, who's able to take out a loan, what kind of loans people are able to handle.
Yeah.
And then those DFs get judged by people repaying their loans and staying in the group. And then that's basically seems like what the whole thing's built around, is get out the loans, make sure the loans get repaid, make sure that, you know, dropouts aren't too high.
Look, I mean, that part of dropouts not too high is big, it's massive.
Oh, I agree.
Because a whole lot of things have to come right.
It's a huge part of the
business. Yeah, so like for example, we do provide basic business education, you know, during group formation processes. So there is a lot of that extra you do.
Right.
So I actually think we're not necessarily that focused on a loan like maybe others.
Right.
I think we're a bit more focused on that, you know. I mean, we are focused, business focused maybe quite a bit. If you really say, you know, more around clients' business and making sure that business succeeds. And I think loan kind of comes back as a result of that. You know, it really works well, that's the way we would do it. And that is more like making sure that clients' businesses succeed. And that is not easy. You know.
Yeah.
And I think a good DF, that's what they focus their attention to, you know. The bad DF just focus on repayment, I can tell you.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a big, the biggest reasons I think that we've ended up giving money to Seth and not to anyone else is that we see the poverty targeting happening.
Yeah.
We see the dropout rates being tracked, and we see the repayment rates being tracked in a meaningful way, which not everyone does. Here, can I give you the card now? I got this. Thank you. Oh, let's take our minutes.
I mean, look, Dropout is your biggest, for me it's the biggest indicator of whether you're doing well or not. Because everything has to come right for dropout to be right, I can sense. I mean, if your dropout is right, you're probably 99% sure that things are rolling along how they're supposed to.
I mean, in the U.S., and I've heard in South Africa too, there are these micro-lending institutions that have a really bad reputation. We call them payday loans in the U.S.
Yeah.
They lend people money at very high interest rates. The people repay, the people stay in, and yet it's, most people think that they're not really benefiting. So that's an example of how you could have high repayment and low dropout and still not be helping people.
The problem I think here, you know, I mean, payday loan is different, it's salary based. And the decision they make is around how much money client is making. Remember, our clients don't make any money if they're not successful. So there's no way you're going to get that money back. You can turn yourself upside down on your head, you know.
But
if they really don't work, then.
You could have a client like this woman selling clothes who, you know, they have a pretty successful business, but they're just taking out loans they don't need, they're paying interest they don't need to pay, and I mean, that would be a question, right? I mean, you guys are making sure people can pay their loans, but are you making sure that they actually need to be taken out? Maybe they're just costing extra money.
Look, I think the whole idea behind the program is that people want to start businesses to improve their lives, you know. I mean, this woman is successful. Remember, she wasn't successful from first loan. And she's staying in more for the social. I can tell you she's staying in here for the social interaction with other people. But she's taking very small loan these days. You know, just something nominal. But she finds a value in social interaction with the rest of the group and the center. Yeah, I mean, if you're strictly speaking, she doesn't need a loan. But you don't know, it's too late. You might have to put it in. If you got the reins, then you'll be. You know, like, I mean, if you're serious about her, yeah, she doesn't need a loan. I mean, she could probably lend us money. But, you know, she finds the value in a social interaction with the group. But, you know, I'm not worried really about those people, you know, because,
right.
I mean, for her to pay 200 in interest over 6 months, I mean, it's not the money, you know. What you're worried about is your basic people who have nothing. And that's why you've got to be very careful. You know, loan can be a very dangerous tool.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it is almost like a double-edged sword. You know? I'm really not worried about successful clients.
See what you mean?
If they're finding a value, you know, for staying in a group and taking a small loan, then be, you know.
Get a couple more here. This is good, getting rid of my change. Oh, perfect. Alright. You ready to go?